The offer was immediately taken under consideration here and in London and in Moscow. It was determined that the offer would be accepted provided the German military high command would also include Russia in the offer previously transmitted. Other changes, which I am unable to report, were made in the reply to the Germans. They probably were in the nature of demands that all Germans under arms surrender simultaneously where they are. But I can report that the Germans have been given the Allies' answer, that they are now considering their reply, that they have until next Tuesday to make a final answer. It is confidently expected in high quarters that the Germans will accept the Allied offer. They must know, as Mr. Churchill has pointed out, that there is a firm military agreement between the Russian government and the American and British governments with regard to the war against Germany. That agreement has been kept to the letter by the Russians. They have never broken it either in spirit. The American and British governments have no desire to alter one comma in that arrangement. They are desirous of keeping the faith to the end. They will not, under any circumstances now foreseeable, accept an offer from the German military command unless it includes on an equal plane the Russian government. On the other hand, the conditions of surrender offered by the Germans are generally acceptable to the American authorities, except for the one point that all the Allies must be included in the terms. When I say generally acceptable, I mean that our high command, in principle, approves, but some details must be changed to comply with conditions laid down jointly by the Allies. The one important element that must be understood by the enemy is that the Allies, all of them, are determined on one point, that the world must understand both the Nazis and the German military establishment have been beaten on the field of battle and unequivocally. History must record that fact because it was the failure of the Allies in 1918 to take the advice of General Pershing that made possible the resurrection of the German Reich as a military power. The military clique in Germany at that time so managed its affairs that a civil government, later repudiated by the military, took the responsibility for surrender. The German army authorities placed themselves in a position to tell the German people after 1918 and the world that they were not beaten. They marched off the field of battle unconquered, and the German Reich was not even so much as touched by an enemy bullet. There can be no repetition of that in 1945, and that has been made entirely clear to the Nazis and the German military high command. And there can be no breaking of the firm military agreement among the three great powers. That also has been made clear, doubly clear. Knowing that, the German military leadership has convinced Himmler, the nominal head of the army, that further fighting can only result in bloodshed, and he has accepted that advice. On the part of the Allies, there can be no let-up in the fighting for the simple reason that any term of armistice at this moment would merely give the Germans, or might give them, an opportunity to prolong hostilities and in the end, more Allied lives would be lost. The dramatic high point in events, so far as Washington is concerned, came on Wednesday afternoon when the President went to the Pentagon building. He went there to speak to General Eisenhower. The circuits, the radio circuits there, are much clearer than they are when they are diverted into domestic lines. So it was there the General gave him the German offer. The President did not commit himself at that time, but I have it on good authority that he thought the German offer was worthy of consideration, with definite changes. I have already reported to you what these changes are in general. He leaned heavily on the advice of his inner military council, Secretary Stimson, Admiral Leahy, General Marshall, Admiral King, and he also brought in the State Department, Under Secretary Grew. Since then, communication has been frequent between the three Allied capitals. One point above all others should be stressed at this time. American authorities, along with Russian and British authorities, have as their first concern the lives of their people and their soldiers. But they cannot avoid their responsibility to see to it that the German military and Nazi party men do not escape the stigma of complete defeat. They cannot avoid the necessity to keep on fighting as hard as ever so that the Germans cannot at any time, now or later, gain time for a breathing spell and further costly struggle. Again, so that you in the radio audience do not misunderstand, there has been no capitulation by the Germans as yet. They have not surrendered. The war goes on, but the German high command has offered to surrender unconditionally to the British and the American governments. The offer will be accepted in general if the Germans also include Russia in the offer previously transmitted. The Germans are now considering their reply. They have until next Tuesday to make that reply.
This special broadcast came to you from the NBC newsroom in Washington. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
Good evening. This is Max Hill in the NBC newsroom in New York. The The National Broadcasting Company tonight is bringing you a special program during which you will hear from NBC correspondents in Washington, San Francisco, and Paris. But first I want to say, and to emphasize as strongly as I can, that Germany has not surrendered. Germany has not surrendered. The authority for that statement is the President of the United States. The Associated Press, which carried the story under a San Francisco dateline, about an hour ago informed its members that the story was false and not true. This announcement came a few minutes after President Truman called reporters into his office at the White House at 9:45 p.m. President Truman permitted reporters to quote him directly. He said, and these are the president's words, "There is no foundation for the rumor." You will hear additional details from Washington on what happened in the White House in just a few moments. General Eisenhower in Paris was completely unaware of the excitement in America over the false report. He was asleep, sound asleep, an aide said, and it was not until he received a call from Admiral Leahy in Washington that he was informed. I suppose he just rolled over and went to sleep again, because the war is still going on in Western Europe. American boys are still dying on the battlefields of Germany, and Eisenhower knows that his job is not yet done. German armies in the West are disorganized and shattered, but sporadic fighting continues. The powerful American 7th Army has rolled on to within 22 miles of Munich, and the American 3rd Army, to the north, is not far behind. On the Eastern Front, the Russians say that the battle for Berlin is in its final stage. One report is that the Red Army is now fighting inside the Reichstag in the center of the city. The Russians do not confirm this rumor. Mass surrenders are thinning the ranks of the weary Germans, most of whom seem to have had enough of certain death. Berlin's defenses, says Moscow, have cracked wide open, and they also say that food and water are critically short. The Russians have turned hundreds of searchlights, most of them captured from the Germans, on the center of the city, making it light as day. Mortars, thousands of heavy artillery guns, and rockets are leveling what little is left of Berlin. In Italy, the capture of Benito Mussolini and other fascists is reported by the Milan radio without confirmation from other sources. This radio station now is controlled by the Italian partisans. Another unconfirmed report from Italy is that German troops in the Lombardy and Piedmont areas have surrendered. Now, for a first-hand report on President Truman's denial of the German surrender, I take you now to NBC in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty in our nation's capital. One of the most confusing days of the war is drawing to a close in Washington, a day that began with reports by the British Press Association Reuters that Heinrich Himmler had offered to surrender unconditionally to the British and American allies, but not to the Russians. The day is ending with a White House tip to newsmen that the lid's on. In the words of President Truman, there is no confirmation, no foundation to the rumor that the Germans have in fact already surrendered. This report, the one now labeled without foundation, came from the Associated Press in San Francisco late today at 7:55 p.m. Eastern wartime, to be exact. A report that quoted an unnamed American official, unnamed at that time, as saying that Germany had surrendered and that an official announcement was expected momentarily. That bulletin stirred the news staffs of the world into immediate action. But all their action produced no results in any official quarters for an hour and a half. Finally, here in Washington, gathering crowds, the indicators, the barometers of the public feeling everywhere forced official reaction. President Roosevelt's troubleshooter on such occasions, Stephen Early, finally appeared, stepped back into the job. He appeared very excitedly in the White House at his old office. There he received reporters. That was at 8:30 or just before. "There has been no official confirmation yet," he said. "The War Department has no confirmation," he went on. "The map room has no confirmation," meaning the place where the latest reports are checked and mapped in the White House. And Early added, obviously emphatic and excited, wishing nothing had ever been said, "As soon as we get official confirmation, the president will read the proclamation over the four networks." But Steve Early was a bit too late. The erroneous report gained public momentum, despite NBC's radio warning that the report was not confirmed by any official source. The crowd across from the White House here in the Capitol began to sing "God Bless America." Finally, the president himself decided to hold a press conference, a press radio conference, about 10 p.m. "Well," he said, "I was over here, as you can see, doing a little work. I had a call," he continued, "from San Francisco, and the State Department called me. I just got in touch with Admiral Leahy and had him call our headquarters, commander-in-chief in Europe, and there is no foundation for the rumor." The reporters started to leave. Some of them held back. They wanted to use the direct quotes, the actual words of the president. That was approved. Are you going to stand by, he was asked. I'm going to finish this work, he said, and he went on signing routine letters, and that was all. And so a story everybody has been waiting for gained premature publication, and after 3 hours, it also gained official denial. As I reported to you from Washington early this afternoon, there has been an approach to the Allied government by the Germans, and it is acceptable in the main if the Germans will include Russia in their surrender offer to Great Britain and the United States. They have been given, as I reported to you at 1:15 p.m., they have been given until Tuesday to reply to the Allied ultimatum. That is the most that can be said at this time on competent authority. But as usual in such cases, it takes an unofficial and yet unconfirmed report, such as the Associated Press distributed from San Francisco, it takes a long time for official facts to catch up with such unofficial reports and rumors. Circulating in Washington are four-page extras tonight, heading in boxcar type, Germany surrenders. The extra is not right. Germany has not surrendered. But one young lady was propelled an hour ago out of a restaurant in downtown Washington when she insisted that the report of surrender was untrue as yet. To repeat what we said at the outset of this broadcast, President Truman says there is no foundation to the report that the Germans have surrendered. The last authoritative information we have is that they've offered to quit, but they've been told Russia as well as the United States and Great Britain must be included in any such offer, and they've got until Tuesday to reply. Perhaps we all feel tonight like the crowd that still stands in front of the White House. One woman in the group, when she was told what Mr. Truman had said, retorted, "Well, anyway, it won't be much longer. We'll get 'em yet." But now, for a report from the scene of the World Peace Enforcement Conference, the spot where all this excitement started, we switch you now to NBC in San Francisco.
And this is Richard Harkness in San Francisco, covering the United Nations Security Conference. The report of Germany's surrender threw this historic international meeting into an uproar today. The delegates from 46 United Nations were in session in the San Francisco Opera House. A San Francisco newspaper had jumped the gun on Germany's giving up and was carrying a huge headline, "Nazis Quit." Well, somehow, newsboys sneaked onto the conference floor. One of the delegates, a Latin American from Honduras, bought a copy of the paper. He held it up for all to see. Well, immediately, that rich, luxurious hall broke into pandemonium. Delegates jumped up from their lush, red plush seats and began to shout, "Hooray!" And in all this tumult, photographers began to touch off their flash bulbs. And for several minutes, this staid, dignified gathering of international diplomats looked as if the old college team had just scored a touchdown. The presiding officer at the time was Russian Commissar Molotov. Well, he had, of course, no idea of what was going on. He had no idea of what set off this demonstration. A look of bewilderment came over his round Russian face. And then, finally, with all the other delegates, Mr. Molotov began applauding, too. Well, it develops now, of course, that the celebration was premature. But when you talk to individual delegates, they do have a feeling that if the Nazis do not surrender tonight, they will in the very new future. Well, I talked, for instance, with Senator Tom Connally of Texas and a member of the American delegation. Connally says that he believes that word of Germany's military collapse will be coming in a matter of hours. Well, when the news of Germany's surrender does come, officials here believe that it will speed the work of this San Francisco conference. Well, after all, we've been thinking of this World Security Council as a post-war organization. So, with the defeat of the Nazis, we will be halfway through the war, and we will be that much nearer to the post-war peace period. And, faced with that optimistic development, we may look for the delegates to stop talking about the technicalities of peace and getting down to the fundamental issues in trying to outlaw any possible World War III. Well, this conference has been in session 4 days now, since last Wednesday. And actually, the delegates have made progress. They've accomplished three important preliminaries. The conference is now organized, a point which represents a victory for the United States and Great Britain. Now, that is plain because our own Secretary of State, Mr. Stettinius, despite the objections of Foreign Commissar Molotov, is in charge of the two important steering and executive committees. Well, second, the conference has settled the issues brought up by Russia. The conference gave the Russians their two additional votes. That, of course, was a foregone conclusion. and the conference refused to seat the pro-Russian Poles from Warsaw, which also went off as scheduled. Anyway, those problems are out of the way with a diplomatic victory for the United States and Great Britain over Russia. And the third point in these preliminaries is this. At any of these international conferences, there always must be a certain amount of preliminary speech-making. Now, most of these speeches have been made now. We've been hearing them for 4 days, and they are out of the way, largely. So while VE Day is not materialized as yet, look for great news. Look for historic news next week from the United Nations Security Conference. And now, let's find out the reaction to this military news in Europe. So this is Richard Harkness in San Francisco, switching you now to Paris.
This is Stanley Richardson at Supreme Allied Headquarters in Paris. The American armies of General Patton and of General Patch are still on the move to cut to pieces the remnants of the German divisions trying to find a defensive refuge in the Bavarian mountains south of Munich. In the north, the British are fighting fiercely in and around Bremen, and the Canadians continue to be occupied with the heavy task of liberating the northern and western portions of Holland. That gives you a very abbreviated picture of the military situation on the continent at 5 o'clock Sunday morning, Paris time. You hear all kinds of rumors here in Paris, as well as at home in the United States. There's no denying the fact that what is left of the German armies are due for early extinction. But there are two very definite things to keep in mind. The first is that our American and British forces are still heavily engaged with the enemy in the north and south of Germany. And the second is that General Eisenhower has already told us that there will be no end to the war in Europe until all of Germany has been occupied. It may be some time yet until that objective is achieved. This is Stanley Richardson at Supreme Allied Headquarters in Paris, returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
Thank you, Stanley Richardson. The real reasons for the RAF raid on Berchtesgaden seem to have been lost in the excitement over Hitler. The British aren't throwing away bombers and crews just to take a crack at a down-and-out dictator. We aren't even sure that Hitler was there, and the army doesn't care. We want him alive for trial. But we do know that this hideout is the last central communication center still in the hands of the German high command. It is the only way enemy leaders can keep in contact with what is left of the disorganized Wehrmacht. The timing of the RAF raid was perfect, less than 12 hours after the Red Armies surrounded Berlin. This ended the usefulness of that city as an operating center. Hitler's fancy chateau and his eagle's nest were just secondary targets. The more important barracks of the high command were the number one objective, and the entire system may have been wrecked by this one raid. At any rate, there hasn't been a repeat performance. There was good reason for using the big 6-ton delayed-action bombs. The control rooms are buried deep in the rocky earth, and these bombs will penetrate at least 16 feet of concrete under unfavorable conditions. When everything is right, they crash through 24 feet of concrete before exploding. This is Max Hill saying thank you and good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.